Hello, and welcome to episode 80 of the Sports Business Classroom audio experience with Jasmine Watkins. Welcome to the Sports Business Classroom audio experience. My name is Andrew Crooks, and I'll be your SBC alumni host for the next few episodes. I attended the SBC Immersive Program at the 2022 NBA Summer League, and I could not be more excited to be a part of this project moving forward. We already have some great guests lined up for you, and I am very excited to bring out this series of inspiring interviews that will help you on your path to a successful career in the sports industry. Thanks for tuning in, and now let the experience begin. In this episode, Jasmine and I go through the timeline of her career and take a few pit stops along the way while she navigated the sports business world. Jasmine started while getting her master's degree at Syracuse, where she served as the team beat writer for the women's basketball and field hockey teams. Then, she spent some time as a content associate working at the worldwide leader in Bristol, ESPN. She worked on the Not Top 10 and Morning Sports Center, and even had a few days on First Take. After a few stops at USA Today, AMG Parade, and Buzzer, she found herself in her current role as the Senior Manager of Community at Nike's Virtual Studios. She also happens to be a major player on NBA Twitter. Without further ado, let's talk to the woman herself, Jasmine Watkins. Welcome, everybody, to the SBC Audio Experience, episode 80, one short of 81, so you know we had to get a great guest in today. We're talking to Jasmine Watkins, one of the queens of NBA Twitter. How are we doing today?
Doing pretty good. Had I known this was like one shy of 81, I would have like passed and
wait until next week's episode.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We're close. This, we're close.
Yeah, happy to be here.
I'm excited to have you. It's been a hell of a journey for you, and now you're over at Nike, running the future, the VR experience, the community, making an impact. And we're really, really excited to have you on and just chop it up about the business of sports that we all love.
Yeah, awesome. Let's get it.
Let's get in. All right. So let's start with an easy one. I ask this of everybody, because I think it's a nice way to lead in. What made you fall in love with the game of basketball?
That's a great question. I would say old Showtime Lakers. My dad was a big Laker fan. He lived in L.A. during the time. He was going to law school, and he just, like, passed all that fandom down to me. So I got really into, like, Magic Johnson and really, like, everybody. Everybody from, like, Worthy, Kareem. And I remember every time ESPN Classic would show those old Laker games, I'd be front and center like it was a brand new game. So, yeah, made it through the Smush Parker years, and here we are.
That was tough. Shout out Smush, though. But he's working on his ref career. He's getting the stripes now, so maybe he can make the calls that we missed against the Celtics.
As long as he's putting in work somewhere, because it wasn't while he was on the Lakers.
Wasn't on the court. In honor of the 81, he did contribute to that game. Kobe and Smush combined for a solid 83 against the Raptors. You picked a good team to start watching. My dad was a Magic guy too, so as soon as I could watch, I had Shaq and Kobe. So we're the same in that. I think Coop's the one that gets underrated, though, to be honest. Over here on the East Coast, nobody ever talks about Coop, but he was the truth.
He was solid. Loved him.
Solid. Great defender. We need that now. All right. I want to start. Oof, such a long, long laundry list of great places, stops along the way. I want to start with your time at Syracuse, where you got your master's degree. Let me get this straight. You got your master's degree. You were the beat reporter on the field hockey team and women's hoops. And you played soccer? Did I get that right?
You were 2 for 3. I did not play soccer, but there was a Jasmine Watkins at Syracuse that played soccer. So we do get intertwined at times.
Okay. I was going to say, that's even for Hermione Granger, that's some tough time turning. That's funny. All right. So obviously, like I said, you kept very, very busy in your year at Syracuse. Did you have any time to watch what was a pretty great Elite Eight team that year in honor of Coach Boeheim retiring today? That team had some dudes on it.
Yeah, I was a big Michael Carter Williams fan at the time. But
shout out Rhode Island.
I'm telling you, I had very little time because I grew up in like Atlanta and there was no field hockey. Like I had no idea of anything about it. So I had to like, I remember like one of the girls was in one of my classes. I'm like, can I just like hang out with you and the team and learn? Because I'm telling you, I came in with like zero knowledge. Usually I can like get a little hockey, get a little any sport I don't know. I have a little bit of knowledge. Field hockey was a completely different thing to me.
So you got the field hockey scouting report saved on the home desktop.
They, you know what? And because nobody else wanted that beat, I was like, I got it. I had a really good relationship with the girls and they were just fire. So I just told the stories that I think that people wanted to hear aside from like just on the field. But like, you know, these girls are people too. So, and a lot of them came from like overseas.
That's cool. So you travel with the team too, or you just did home games and kind of made yourself an integral part of the locker room?
Just did home games. Definitely became like, if there was a mascot, it probably would have been me because I was with them for so long. Like even they would go to like flip night together. We would all like, I probably shouldn't say this, but we would all drink together. We went for pizza.
College kids don't drink. No,
yeah,
never.
You know. And, you know, they're athletes, so they really were supposed to be doing that in season. But, yeah, like, we went a lot of places, and I got to know just certain things that I probably wouldn't have picked up elsewhere without them. So they really helped me kind of craft what is now, like, my career. And I do so many interviews, and I never give them enough credit.
I love that you can give them a shout-out here on our platform. That's nice. You're talking about them being a stepping stone for you and obviously your great career. Syracuse has been known to produce some demons in the sports business industry. Can you talk about just your time there overall, maybe some lessons you learned and how that set you up for the career that you inevitably took and ran with?
Yeah, I think Syracuse, obviously I'm biased, but it is the top school for like sports and sports journalism. I got to meet Mike Tirico while I was there. He came by, talked to us. The guy who was overseeing the sports communication part of it was Dennis Denninger, and he was responsible for putting the spelling bee on ABC and ESPN. So he's like he was an ESPN icon. He had Bruce Bernstein come talk to us, and at the time, Bruce was the lead producer on NBA on ESPN. And so just getting all this knowledge from all these different people, I'm just like, these are lessons that I never would have had I went elsewhere, because Syracuse and ESPN have such like a deep pipeline. But then I also noticed that Mike, Bruce, Dennis, like I'm only seeing men, and there was just this huge gap there. And I'm like, one of the lessons I learned is like, how can I help fill it? And actually I had a class with Jasmine Jordan, and she was, albeit in a different realm, she had the same thought, like there's not enough women in this space.
It was International Women's Day this week. That's
you know.
do you ever go back to the school and serve as a mentor to some of the young women coming up now? Are there anybody we should be having our eye out for as sports superstars?
Good question. You know, actually some students actually do reach out to me and they're like, oh, I went to Q's, and I give them advice. We talk here and there, but the school has never like formally asked me back. I would gladly go back. Even now where I'm sure it's like snowing for the non-4 days that it does not snow. Like I will go back and talk to them in a heartbeat, because to see people who look like me, I think that would have been like super beneficial.
It was a long way. Representation is everything, right?
You know?
So for the Syracuse students and also Syracuse PR team, you heard her say it, she'll come help out anytime you need it. For students who are currently kind of navigating the waters, job hunting, finishing up at school, can you talk about maybe as one of the queens of NBA Twitter, let's go this direction. As we see, social media can really be a downfall or an uplifter in a lot of cases. Navigating that can be one of the toughest things as a young adult in today's day and age. you seem to have done it pretty well for yourself in that avenue. Can you talk about maybe some success or downfalls there?
Yeah, social media is always tricky. And I think I got onto Twitter before it was the behemoth that it is today. And I honestly just used it to like live tweet Laker games because that's what I was watching. I didn't think people cared, and I didn't really want to share like what I was eating for lunch and that kind of stuff. But over time, I would say these jokes in like a group chat, and like my friends would say, if you don't start putting these out on Twitter, we're going to like steal them and tweet them ourselves. And I don't think I would be anywhere near where I am today without Twitter. But one of the things I learned is that you always have to like stay positive, stay away from like very weird. And I know it gets hectic with like NBA news and like these players' lives are intertwined, but I try to stay away from like people's families. And if it's a joke, which I'm used to making, I like lighthearted jokes, something that if they saw, they wouldn't be like, who is this talking about me?
Mm-hmm.
Even like, I did a joke about like LeBron saying like, oh, this is how the old heads get you. This is like a couple of months ago. And he was like, oh, that is funny. And I was like, because as your platform grows, you never really think, oh, LeBron is going to see this or KD is going to see this. But it's something that I think we all have to keep in mind, especially with how online these athletes are.
Well, I think we all know KD is going to see it. But that's a very good point. My favorite Twitter was back in the day where you could tweet after school, who's running today, and have a full 10 by the time last period ended. That was when Twitter was a good place. This got real toxic.
Good times.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Getting in a homeroom being, good morning, everybody. And then you get, good morning, good morning. It was so nice. What happened? It's crazy.
Way too much.
That's a good one. Twitter is so good and so bad at the same time. It's so nice to have the 24-hour news, you know, stuff like the KD trade breaking and all the memes last night about the poor ball boy. He woke up to hell.
That poor guy. And I was like on the fence. That's one of the ones I was on the fence about, like making a joke because KD was hurt and it wasn't the ball boy's fault. And I just let that one go by because it's so weird sometimes.
Especially
for me, like working at Nike now, it's even harder because a lot of these athletes are Nike athletes.
Do you have a funny story for us about that by chance? Do you maybe have I know you said LeBron was like, that was funny, but do you have a maybe cross reaction where you tweeted something and then you had a meeting with that person and they brought it up?
Thank goodness, no. But I'm in like lockstep because I'm in lockstep with like the head of comms for Nike.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that I had a platform before I got here. And so we just try to stay on the same wavelength because it's kind of like uncharted territories. Like people have gotten famous through working at Nike and they built their platform that way. But it's like unprecedented for somebody to have their own and they come in and working. So I try to steer clear. And I know it sounds weird because I've kind of like made a name for myself on Twitter, but I try to stay under the radar for the most part. And hopefully like it is just jokes, but I hate to say that about Twitter because it's opened so many doors.
Absolutely. It's a tool if you use it, but it can be a weapon.
All right,
let's move past Syracuse. You worked at USA Today for a little bit. What were your day-to-day responsibilities there? You were more behind the scenes pitching segments, right?
Yeah. That's when they were like just getting started with like For the Win. They didn't know really what it could be. And I'm like, this is a once in a lifetime idea where you're taking all this sports content, but making it digestible, short and to the point. And at that time, like I'm just coming out of grad school. I don't have a lot of time to read like these long form stories. And I'm like, this is what I want to do. So I would like pitch ideas. I would edit some, but I was really, and I was supposed to be on USA Today Sports, but I was so like enthralled in For the Win that I was like, here's what we should do. And here's how this should go. And I remember one night, me and one of the editors were watching a Pacers game. And I want to say, oh man, his name escapes me, but he did play for the Lakers at one point. I want to say...
David West? No. It would have been one of the role guys, maybe Caron. Right? Caron Butler was on that team.
Not Caron.
The Pacers 13, 14.
Man, I want to say Roy, but I could be wrong.
Was it Roy? I mean, Roy was, I mean, the pillar of that team inside.
Tall center.
Yeah, Roy Hibbert.
Yeah. Did I dream that? Did he play for the Lakers at one point?
He did. Okay. We got him for 1 year. I think it was with D'Lo and JC were still there. Yeah. And,
I feel like I know, as many don't, but I feel like I can say former Laker so many times, like, Nash Howard. And I'm like, did this person actually play for the Lakers at some point, or did I just dream that? But I remember
it's a fight dream. Yeah, it is tough.
I remember him, like, he was on the Pacers, and it was like a timeout, and the commercial was like fading in. But before they cut, he had a bottle of Gatorade, and he drank it, either Gatorade or Powerade, and he drank the whole bottle in 6 seconds. Somebody made a vine of that, and I was like,
the Roy Hibbert challenge.
Exactly. I'm like, I was sitting there. I was like, first of all, that's impressive. But the guy next to me, he was like, I could do that. And I'm like, no. And so we go into this like back and forth. Next day, we're bringing like bottles and bottles of like Powerade or Gatorade, and we're like videotaping everybody drinking them. I'm like, I'm not gonna do that because I know I couldn't. And it became like this whole thing that spread like wildfire. And I'm like, look what just came from this one like back and forth idea. And that was probably like the highlight of me being there.
I mean, I remember that going viral. And there was definitely a few attempts in my football locker room. Some went well, some didn't. But you know, we move on. That's funny. I remember that. That was awesome. I also forgot Roy Hibbert played for the Lakers, but now I definitely remember the bad contract and slow feet. But there were high hopes. We also had high hopes for Timothy way back when.
Good Lord.
That was the worst one.
It's hard to say which is worse, but yes, that was
the worst. Is it Mozgov or Dang? That's the real question. I think we're still paying Luol.
Yo, Dang was the worst. And every time I'm like, yeah, that's the worst, somebody says somebody else. And I'm like, no, that's the worst. But it just shows you how many like bad contracts they've had. Good Lord. Sorry.
Despite all that, though, we still have 17 championships.
That is true.
I bet we get 18 before the Celtics, by the way.
Oh, of course.
If they keep blowing leads. So could you talk about some of the differences in your life, working in sports and then working somewhere more traditional news-based like USA Today and some of your other stops? How do those skills that you picked up there translate? And then vice versa, where there's stuff that you pulled from your experience in sports that helped you in those different opportunities?
I think working in sports really taught me to think quickly and adapt very quickly. But like these other stops that I've had where there'd be like sporting news or the more traditional ones, there's a lot more time to plan and you're really pitching and formulating this entire idea, which I think is great, but you have to find out which is more like your style or what you have more passion for. I think Jasmine at her core translated very well to like sports media. She could like be herself, especially if it was like a casual, like a for the win where they blend pop culture and sports. That's where I feel like I really got to shine. Whereas like traditional, it's just not my jam. Like I felt like I was trying to fit into this mold that really wasn't me, but I knew I had to take it in order to like advance.
Did the time and the other stops make you hungrier to get back into sports?
I think so. I think I was just like kind of going through the motions at certain points, and I knew I was not passionate. Like, it's so hard to describe, but like, I knew I wanted to get back to what made me happy. And like in sports media, like the money is rarely there where you want it to be. So at the very least, you should be able to be happy, and that's what I was missing.
Do you feel the difference when you wake up now versus then? Because as someone who goes and does the 9 hours in the tube every day, I miss that feeling more every day of my life.
You know, and I'm telling you, I was at a crossroads where I was thinking about getting out of sports. Like, I was like on the cusp, and I was freelancing for like Coke and Spotify, And I'm like, you know, I could do this and the money is better. And then like, I'm also like, I don't know. They sell me on these ideas of like the intersection of sports and tech, which I think Buzzer is. And I think right now with Nike, it's like the intersection of sports and culture. So I'm not 100% in sports, but I get to work directly with it. And I think that's really my sweet spot now.
Happy medium. That's best case scenario. All right. I think it's time to move to Bristol. You spent some time there back in the heyday of ESPN, the Stuart Scott, the Skip Bayless days. What were some of your responsibilities there?
Started out in highlights, you know, working in television, the 4 p.m. to 1:30 a.m. shift. Learned a lot. Obviously, you got to move quick. You got to watch these games, and you have to be able to write about the games to people who did not watch a second of it in their own voice. So it taught me a lot. From there, like, I expressed interest on working in social and on the social team, and it was great. Like, they're pretty open to if you want to like switch departments. But what got me like when I first started is that they were very like choosy with who they wanted on social teams. And so they said, well, why don't you just shadow on your day off? And I said, cool. You know, I just want to learn, and I'm fresh. I'm new. Of course. Did it really well. Like, pitched a few things that went over well. And they're like, we want to move you to the Morning Sports Center, which is like a huge honor around ESPN. Yeah. The only problem is that it's a 2 a.m. to 11 a.m. shift. And for a morning person, that's probably the worst. Not but it. That one, I got to work on the Not Top 10, which was like my favorite thing ever. It's, you know, and that's like really my jam, where it's like, oh, somebody tripped doing this. Like, and I would come into work at 2 a.m. and my inbox will be filled with, hey, did you check this play out? And it's really like funny plays, and me getting to decide which ones make it into the Not Top 10 was a huge honor. But what I learned is that if you're on these night shifts, which nobody really wants, your ideas will be heard, because when we have those like production meetings, mm-hmm. it's like six people in the room as opposed to like 16 at night. I mean, like during the pre-production for the mm-hmm. late sports centers. So, yeah, there's a lot to get into with ESPN.
Well, I was going to ask this question a little bit later, but since you brought up the Not Top 10, I need to know your all-time favorite.
Oh.
What's your best clip? You know you got one.
I can't even like remember. I've seen so many follies. It's been crazy. I think like a rail of my favorite would probably be I can't remember who it was, but I've seen a couple where a baseball player would go up for the home run. He would try to catch it and fall over the wall or the railing or whatever. Yeah. But I'm just like, I struggle putting that in because I'm like, damn, you really laid your heart out for this. But also, it is kind of funny. Also, like a player going up for a dunk and just missing it, missing a wide open dunk. That's and not like a like it fell off the rim. Yeah. I'm talking about like
Tomahawk. No, you're talking Bam. Shaq and a fool, JaVale yeah. McGee. Oh yeah.
and it flies somewhere. I also love when players like pass the ball to a ref or to a player that's not even on the court, because I've done it myself as a ball player back in the day. But if I was a professional, would I? I don't know.
Do you ever play in the runs at ESPN? I heard those are pretty legendary. I got a few buddies over there that tell me no chance. You don't want any smoke.
You don't. I played in a couple, and it is like, it's brutal, but it's especially brutal if you're like a woman, because the last thing any man at ESPN wants is like a woman like scoring on them, like assisting in a basketball. Like, they don't want you to do nothing. They will stop you because they know like once something happens, like a play like that, it spreads like wildfire. And before you know it, the whole campus knows about it, and it never ends for them. So I think it's also shout out to the women, because it's Women's History Month. But the women who play in those leagues consistently, they are so fire, because the men are ruthless.
You ever see Doris play?
No, I've only seen her like dribble and shoot, but I've never seen her like in a run.
I'm friends with her son. He was the captain of my golf team in high school, and he's actually a pro golfer now. But we used to play horse, and she would just come out there and just dust us. The one time I saw her, it was tough. Very fun. Oh, she's the best. So did you get to work with First Take at all during your time there?
I filled in a couple of times on so that show.
That was when it was pop. That was the original First Take, the Maggie Gyllenhaal highlights, yeah. Jalen going on there. I gotta ask if you have any great memories from any time you spent with them. And did you have any idea the impact that was gonna have on social media and sports media as a whole? Because that changed everything.
Yeah. It changed the trajectory of like sports media, like as a whole. And it's so crazy to think about the impact as you're in it. I'm just like, okay, yeah, this is a show, blah, 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 no big deal. But over the years, even after I stopped working, like I probably worked less than 10 times on it. Mm-hmm. After I left, I'm like, I could not watch a full show, but I would watch all clips on social media. That it wasn't like my favorite show to work on, because I think NFL Live with Trey Wingo at the time, that was my all-time favorite show. He was
the
like
king of the reference. Nobody did the pop culture reference like Trey Wingo.
He was amazing. And he was like, I'm not on cam. So I think there's a difference between people who are on cam and off cam and maybe how they're treated. Trey Wingo was cool with every single person there. And he made every single person feel like they were like worthy and appreciated and empowered. So sometimes I'd be like, hey, Trey, what do you think of this? And he'd be like, he would say it legit in the next segment. And I'm like, that's crazy.
Awesome.
Yeah, because I'm just like a content associate or whatever. So I'm low key, I'm nobody. And I'm just, yeah, that was my favorite show. But there's no way we would have predicted like First Take, what it is now, and even like Skip Bayless and what he is now, and that they would both be what they are without each other.
Remember when he liked LeBron back then?
I cannot even remember that, I'm gonna be honest.
We swept it under the rug, but back then he used to defend him. It was the craziest thing. I see the highlights pop up on TikTok sometimes, and I'm like, did that happen? Is this real?
Yeah. It's kind of how I feel with like former Lakers. Did I dream this? Because I cannot remember. It seems like forever ago.
That's what were some of the biggest lessons you took from your time in Bristol? I know you mentioned the relationships with Trey, the hard work behind the scenes, different schedules. What were some of your biggest takeaways?
One of my biggest takeaways was to pitch and repitch again. There were certain times, like a lot of people at ESPN have been working there since 1979 when it started. So even as I made my like way into the social team in that stint, I'm like, these people built ESPN, they made it what it is now, but they don't know social the way me and my cohorts know social. So I remember like pitching something and they were like, no, we're not doing this. And we went to dinner that night. It was like a group of four of us. And I'm like, this idea is so fire. Like we have to repitch. And albeit it was a better pitch, it was the same one. I think I learned that your voice needs to be heard and it's okay to shout. And this sounds so cliche, but like take up space at the table, because if you're quiet, if you're quiet, nobody is going to hear anything you have to say. But even if they say no, at least you tried. And I know it's so intimidating because you're in these production meetings with like SVP and at the time, like Stuart Scott. So all these people you grew up watching. And you don't want to look stupid in front of them, but it goes a long way with like where you want to be at ESPN, making your name known around campus. And even if it was a stupid idea, at least they'll say she spoke up, which is something not a lot of like new people do.
The last episode we just finished, the theme was don't be afraid to ask for something. You just might get it. There you go.
I love that.
That fits there too. I like that. That's a good philosophy. Last CT question, I swear. But I went to college out there. I'm going to have a lot of people tuning into this. I got to ask, what's the best pizza spot?
In Connecticut?
That New Haven pizza is different.
I'm going to tell you.
You didn't like it?
I don't remember any good pizza from there. I'm gonna be honest. Every time I had good pizza, I went to the city.
Smart.
Don't hate any Connecticut people. But
no, it's all right. The New Haven, only New Haven, has this like primo oven baked style pizza that's pretty famous. So I figured I had to ask. Sally's A Pizza is my favorite.
Every time, and I kind of regret this, but every time I had like a few days off or any time off, like any kind of off time, I bolted from the city because I legit hated Bristol as a city.
It's tough.
I mean, and everybody who was anybody that you could hang out with, you already work with. So I just kind of went to see my own friends, and some of them lived in New York. So
yeah. That Metro North ride's only an hour. It's not bad. I understand. Yeah,
it's worth it.
So I wanted to ask a few quick questions about Buzzer. I thought, even when it came out, I thought this was a really cool idea. And it's kind of getting more legs as sports embrace the gambling industry and the social media era where people want their news fast. They want to know what's going on, especially with their bets. Do you think there's more of an avenue opening up in fields like that? And do you see any companies trying to build a similar platform to rival what FanDuel's done with that? Because I think it's really cool and more applicable now than ever.
I don't see any companies like doing specifically what Buzzer does. I love when I was there, we have the FanDuel partnership, and I think it's like revolutionary. Like Bo, shout out to Bohan and the team, because he took a chance on me, and I tell him all the time, like, you changed my life. I think his idea was so revolutionary. And even now, at the time, we weren't leaning into betting. And I can see it wasn't like a really quick uptick when people were like willing to embrace it. But once you add in like parlays, and at the time I was living in a state where the bets were illegal, I'm like, this is actually fire, because I have no interest in like Kings Bulls, but I need to see if like Lonzo hit the first basket. I would be crazy betting on like first basket parlay.
The first baskets.
I know.
Shout out to JaVale when he was on the Lakers. It was free money every time he win the tip, run right down there, and they throw him an alley first play.
Man, I'm telling you. And every single time, like, I fell for it. And you know, the thing with FanDuel is they'd be like I just put $50 in. And, you know, I would lose it all, whatever. And then, like, you know what? Here's some more money. And it just never ended. But
that's
nothing
how they get
track.
You.
but I think with betting and people's, like, interest in knowing if their bets hit, but not so much, or actually seeing their bets hit live, I think it has, a like, real legs, like I never thought before.
It is crazy to hear, like, the team's partner with Caesars and all of that. It's just, it's a little fishy. We're starting to feel like it's the WWE. I don't know. We're selling NFL scripted. all right. As media rights for the NBA and other leagues kind of start to enter a new landscape, testing different platforms, maybe, again, overhauling the way we consume social media, do you think a league takes matters into their own hands? So kind of like I was thinking off the Buzzer blueprint, right? If you had the NBA app and you were posting snippets, oh, this game's close, boom, like they tried to do with Crunch Time, but if they took ownership of their content, do you think anything like that might be in the works with the media rights deal up in arms right now?
I think it would be smart. But I think, honestly, their best bet as the NBA would be to acquire Buzzer. And that way, like, Buzzer has its own arm, and it's not like the NBA saying, we're taking ownership of this. And then, actually, not to, like rain on anybody's parade, but I think the NBA League Pass app could be better.
Yes, correct.
And I think, like, Buzzer has such a direct, like, a really good avenue for that. So I think if they work together, it would be much better than what the NBA could do on its own. And forgive me, because I'm talking slower because I'm also trying to like be diplomatic about things.
No, I appreciate that. I definitely agree. And I think that if they went that route, it would be a cooler platform, and you could market it to the people who are in the TikTok era where they don't have the time span to watch a full game, but they'll watch 5 minutes at the end of, like you said, Bulls Kings. You want to see if De'Aaron gets his 30 and if the beam gets lit. Nobody wants to watch 2.5 hours, but they'll watch the beam, you know? And I think that could be something really cool. And that was the first thing I thought when I started using the app. I was like, why don't they just play like bits of games like that? And then Crunch Time came out this year. And I mean, we'll see if that catches on. We know how successful Red Zone is.
Yeah. Yeah. Really? It's a little different, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. I want to get into the Nike stuff. I think we're here. We're ready for our steak of the meal. What is your day-to-day look like as the manager of community in the virtual studios at Nike? Give us a peek behind the swoosh and what you guys have going on over there.
It's been great so far, to be honest. I work with a really great team. We get to do these activations, and it's really like bringing people into the Web3 era and getting them excited about it, which maybe they wouldn't be beforehand. But what I love about my job is that I get to touch so many external and internal partners. So I work with like DEI, our social community impact groups, HBCUs, and yard runners, and making sure that minorities are not left behind when it comes to this new space. And that's really my passion, because you think of like Web3, it's like, oh, I might get scammed or whatever. And we're always very hesitant. But I think the way that like Nike is approaching it makes it very safe. And because we're so focused on education and being intentional, more people would be open to, you know, being a part of our platform.
That's awesome. I mean, it's a lot easier to sell people on the swoosh than a tech company, right? You know, we've all seen it. It's been in our lives forever. We trust it. It's a good product. That's awesome. So how close are we as consumers to maybe being able to watch a game from our couches and be in the arena? Or like you said, talking about Web3, maybe we're in a meta arena of crypto, watching Roy Hibbert in a past life. how close are we to maybe being in 2K? Who knows? What's the industry look like? What do we have rolling down the pipeline?
I would say, not to get off Kevin Garnett, but anything is possible. I think what we are working on is helping people find a value in their own creativity. So it's important to us to empower those who may not have the resources to create whatever they're trying to create, and hopefully like get a revenue share off of that. It's hard because I'm trying to be super like comms. I know I'm talking like I've switched into like corporate Jasmine for a second, but we'll go back to fun stuff.
I promise. We will go back to fun stuff.
Thank you, because I hate that side of me, but I want everybody to know that, you know, anything is possible, and it's not just about like the money for the consumer. It's about like unlocking possibilities. Like, we built the last 50 years as Nike by Nike and by people in Nike. The next 50 should be us and our audience together. And I don't even like to call them like consumers anymore. This is all one. Like, Nike does not move without all of us. We all grew up wearing Nikes.
So that kind of answered my next question. You're right ahead of me. We're in lockstep. when you are representing a brand with as much worldwide recognition and power as Nike has, are you more looking to maintain that continuity and integrity, or are you trying to reach new things, reach new heights, always get better? And I think you answered that pretty straightforwardly. But I mean, is it tough kind of toeing that line sometimes where it's, you want to be the safe product you guys have always been, safe company, or you want to go for the moon?
I think you could be both. One of the things that we always say here is that, you know, we're not first, we're forever. And I think with what we're trying to do, we're unlocking the possibilities of a whole new world, not to sound Aladdin-like, but also we want to kind of toe the line and make sure we're putting, you know, our audience first. And we want to be that same reliable Nike without going super crazy. But we also want to push the barriers of sport and culture like we do in our day-to-day lives.
Okay, so along those lines, are you guys going to be looking to kind of partner with more content creators, more influencers, or are we going to stick it straight to the athletes, kind of involving the modern age? Like, are we going to see a Trill Withers Air Force One? Are we going to get that someday?
You will not get me on record saying there will be a Trill Withers Air Force One.
Trying to catch you.
I did not want him texting me like, where's my shoe? No. But like with that solution, what we're building, we had a Air Force One challenge, which is where our consumers, not consumers, our audience got to vote on their favorite Air Force Ones over the years, and they control the journey. Like, we had our design team get ready for like X amount of shoes, but then the voting took on a life of its own, and they had to go back and redo some things. Then we had the Air Force One challenge, and 4 people actually won that. And we got to hear their stories and hook them up with designers.
That's
so awesome. I think it's less about, because like you'll always get LeBron, Serena, with all due respect, and they're world-class athletes, they deserve their own lane. But there are also people like you and me who are creative, and how can we get involved in Nike, and how can the everyday person get involved? And I think that's what we're trying to solve for right now. So stay tuned, because there will be some like, we did announce the winners, but there'll be, you know, something cool coming from them.
Nice. I actually just ordered a custom pair of Blazers the other day once they got added to Nike ID. That's fun.
So I'll check you out.
Hey, I'm trying. I had the Kobe Fives back in the day, custom in my blue and white middle school shoes. And everybody was like, how the hell did you get those? They only come in gold and purple. I'm like, I got a guy. It's just NikeID.com. There's no guy. If that's the secret.
Never give up your secrets.
All right. I don't know if it's the last serious question, but it's just semi-serious. Are you guys excited for the Air movie? I think it's always interesting to get kind of an inside perspective when biopics and stuff like this come out, where it's like, you're in it every day. You're in the production. So it's like, are you guys excited? Are you apprehensive? Have you seen it? I know it's been out in LA for a little bit. Unlike the, I know a couple of people have seen it in the sports media world. Are you excited?
What I'm about to say are only the views of Jasmine, and I cannot speak on the Nike team or their feelings about it. I, as a movie lover and sneaker lover and storyteller, I am interested in seeing it. So I think that's the best answer I could give.
We can move on, I promise. That was it.
He's killing me.
That was good. So throughout your career, we've been through a lot of it now. You've had several different roles, bunch of different avenues, different industries, different roles. Between writing, reporting, brand management, content creation, the future, and the role in the community you have now, what do you feel like is the best version of Jasmine?
Cool. I would say professionally right now, I'm in my peak. I am obviously much older than I was when I worked at ESPN, much more outspoken. I get to interact with people in the community, which I've done in like social roles that I've had, but I'm actually like face to face with these people. Like, we've gone to Houston, Charlotte, Chicago, and really hearing like real time feedback and taking it back to my team, and we get to ideate on it, has been like, an experience I've never had before. This is the best version of me, because I'm not afraid to bring who I am to work and not afraid to push the boundaries, because I work for a company that is so used to doing that.
That's awesome. That's a good answer. What do you do in your free time that helps you in your day-to-day? You have any hobbies? You still playing?
I play a little basketball still. What I do now that I think really helps, and I don't know who would agree with this, but I run or work out in the morning, because my daily life is so focused on being verbose and talking to different people and, hey, I want to interview, or do you have time to chat? Let's hop on a quick call. I have to talk all day long. And obviously, like, I've gone through media training and all that has been great, but I just need like an hour to an hour and a half of my day where I don't have to talk to anybody. So I keep my phone on do not disturb. And I just start running. That's been something that I think has helped me like get ready for the day, decompress. I don't have to think about, oh, this is what I have to do for work. All that can wait. And it really showed me, like, no matter how much I love my job, it is a job. And my mental and physical health comes first. Other than that, I love a good movie. I like to, like, turn my brain off for a second and get lost in whatever story is being told. I'm out here in LA, so I've been, like, hiking a lot more. Yeah, I also went to, like, a sneaker creating class one time. It was pretty cool.
Was probably awesome. Did you, like, make your own too? Or they just taught you the process?
They taught me the process. You get to, like, you get, like, a blank canvas of a shoe. You get to design it however you want. And, I mean, I couldn't do that with, like, within Nike and talk to our designers. But I just, you know, you kind of want to, like, get into your own hobbies. I've been getting into, like, pottery a little bit. I know. It's a weird one. But
that's cool. I like it, though.
Still looking for a little more time to read. But other than that, yeah, everything's good.
You led me right into my next one.
Oh, my God.
I know you're an avid reader. No. What's the best book you've read this year?
Are you saying that because of the freezer thing?
You took the punchline. That was the next question. But what is the best book you've read this year?
The best book I've read this year? It Was All a Dream by Justin Tinsley.
Okay.
On Notorious B.I.G. I would say within the last, like, 365 days, that's the best book I've read.
Okay. Are there any currently in the freezer? That was my next question. Are there any books in timeout? I think it's brilliant, by the way. If it works, I mean, clearly you've made it. You're very successful, so I may pick it up, but I had to ask. I had to work it in.
The last time I had a book in the freezer because it was just that scary is probably when a guy I was dating had me read, what was it? It was some kind of book with, like, the father or some kind of, like, guy was on this, like, serial killing spree. And this is how, you know, I tried to, like, blank it out of my mind because I can't even think of the title.
No thanks. I'm out on that one.
That was spent a lot of time in the freezer, but he's just like, I can't believe you ever read this book. It's great storytelling and you love this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, that book has spent the most time in my freezer since, like, The Shining.
It's got like 3 years worth of leftovers just stacked on top. I understand. I had to ask because it was one of the funniest things I ever heard. I did a double take. I'm like, did she say that? She really put it in the freezer? But I love it. I think it's great. I told you we were gonna get back to laughing and having fun.
Yeah, we're back now.
Here's a good one. If you could choose through all your years and all the people you've been around, what's the one biggest key to success as a sports business professional? Whether it's a character trait, a specific skill set, a mentality, what makes it work?
Good. This might be cliche, but I would say being adaptable and be willing to take what others want. I've ran into so many people over the years and they're like, I want to do this, or I want to be Malika Andrews, or I want to be, I don't know, Marin Fader, like all these. And I'm only naming women for now.
It's your month. You name them all. I love it.
Thank you so
more
much.
More women.
or they're like, I want to be Joy Taylor, but they're like, and I think that's great. That's a great goal and you'll probably get past it. But I do think all these women and all these people have started in smaller markets and they probably said yes to things that they didn't really want to do, but they knew it would get them where they wanted to be. And I've said yes to some things when I was even at ESPN, they wanted to put me on like hockey highlights. I knew somebody wanted it, not me, but I was just like, yes, I will take it in the way I wrote about it and I'm going to make it my own and I'm going to move on from there. So I would say, like, be adaptable and be willing to take and make something your own that you never thought about. You can't get to, like, NBA highlights or football or whatever you're into without going through no shade, field hockey, lacrosse, the lesser covered sports first.
We all got to pay our dues. I've done some color on some softball games in my day.
Exactly.
Another good one. This is one of my favorite questions to ask people. You, more than a lot of our guests, have gotten to bounce around the country a lot and experience a lot of different cultures, different cities, different weather patterns and environments. Shout out to my beloved Northeast, where it was 65 today and snowed 6 inches on Tuesday. Ridiculous. I don't know how that happened. But which one is your favorite and which one's the most underrated out of the American major cities?
Can I choose Atlanta or am I being biased?
I think you're biased there.
Okay.
If I said that's Providence, fair. Rhode Island, you'd know I'd be lying, but at least Atlanta's cool.
To start, I think the most underrated is probably Charlotte. It's got everything from like food truck Fridays. It's like this community. It gives you like a community, small town kind of feel, but it's a city. And when I was living there, it was unlike any other. Big foodie city, got parties. I think they had CIAA at the time. And there's just so much going on. Hornets, you know, give or take. You got the Panthers. And then the minor league team, I think it's the Knights. The stadium right in the middle of the city. It's not even about the game. It's about the vibes.
That's so sweet.
Charlotte's definitely underrated. My favorite outside of Atlanta, I would probably have to go with maybe LA. That could be a little bit of a recency bias, but aside from the weather that we've been in recently, when I first moved here, weather was great. I think the people are not always are portrayed like influencers. Like, yes, you'll have all those, and I'm one of them too. But there are some like really legit, real people. And if you can find them and get past like the traffic, it's a pretty nice place to live, assuming that you have the funds to live here.
that's fair. I've heard great things. I've been out there, but vacation is very different than living. So I don't like to make too sharp judgments. Mine's New Orleans. That's my favorite place on earth. Oh man,
Andrew,
I could talk about it for hours.
Did
you go for Mardi Gras?
No, we went for like a swoosh session with Nike. So we were there. Good Lord. This past Friday, we had a session. So I was there like the week right after Mardi Gras. I love the city. The way I would have to work out to live there would be insane.
Every meal you have to get combo to start, and then you end up with an etouffee and an oysters bienville, and then you get into jambalaya. It goes on and on. It's my favorite place on earth. I don't know. I hope I make it down there one day, but I will never leave. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, great city. The way I would have to work, I don't know if I could do that trade off because the food. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Be looking like The Rock in 2 weeks just because I have to work that hard. All right. Let's see. When we're looking at the global growth of the game, right? Do you, as a Nike executive, do you see a shift in the fandom and the marketability levels of the international guys versus the homegrowns?
Oh, I think so. I don't know what it was about like growing up watching hoops in the 90s where everything, at least as I'm thinking, everybody was, you know, from USA and like, I can't even think of like, I don't know. It's hard to think of like foreign players who were so prevalent, like maybe Tony Kukoc, but I'm not even sure if I'm just generalizing based off his name.
Probably Hakeem was probably the first one, right?
Also, okay, that's a much better...
the first big one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but like, I think the shift here with like Luka and Giannis is that they're so personable. They're so likable. And social media has given us a look into like who they really are. And Giannis was with his dad jokes. And Luka, who likes to just chill like us, but is also like this beast on the court. There is a shift because these guys are so marketable and they're so likable and people want to be like attached to them. I think other players like in the USA are still as marketable, but these I hate to call them like foreign guys, but these other guys are just like, I don't know. They're as marketable as anybody else now.
There's just something about when Jokic gets his MVP trophy handed to him and he's pulled up by his horses. You can't replicate that. When Tatum inevitably gets his, we're going to be in the city of St. Louis with the arch, and there's no horses. There's no horse-drawn carriage with a 300-pound Serbian man on it. We can't compete with that. He cracks.
Shout out to St. Louis, though. No shade.
No. St. Louis is great. No, that wasn't. That's just, it's Jokic.
Yes.
So, as talking about evolving, talking about the global growth of the game, how we look for the future, where are the jobs? Where are the jobs going to be in 5 years? What are we missing? What are we not seeing? Is there a TikTok on the horizon? Where do we tell our students, our people trying to get into the industry that we love? Where should they look?
I would say if your passion is writing and storytelling, go into that. I started out, I wanted to be a columnist, but I quickly learned that people are much better wordsmiths than I ever could be. So I leave that to the Marissa Fayers, the Caitlin Coopers. But then...
she's the best. I shouted her out on our last show. She might be the... 5 years might be the best basketball writer on the planet. Caitlin's unbelievable.
Caitlin is the most underrated but appreciated. Like, I think people know she's got, like, super great knowledge of the game. Mm-hmm. But because she chose to, like, stay in Indy, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think she's got the national attention that she should, but she is so brilliant. And I'm just like, even anytime I talk to her, I'm like, trust your gut. She does not like speaking on podcasts. And like, I think we all are super self-conscious, but I'm like, you are fire. Like, you are amazing. And
if Tyrese is going to rock your shirt to the games, you should know how awesome you are, right?
Man. Oh, God, I love her. Okay, that was a tangent.
She's the best. Go ahead, sorry.
But I tell people, go into social if that's your bag. It's not easy because it's always on. It's 24/7. But my mind and my thinking is that the CMOs and VPs of marketing of tomorrow are social media managers of today. Basically because social media managers, and I don't agree with this, they have to do so much. By social media manager, these teams mean photographer, editor, blogger, like all these different things. So I think with that, and the pay could be a lot better, you're tasked with doing so many things. But the one thing that you're doing at the foundation is marketing your content to your audience. And that's where I think the future is. Like, so many people I know who have come up in social have just transformed into something like, not to say bigger and better, because social is still like king to me, but they've just gone on to do some incredible things. Like Astasia Williams, she used to work for the Panthers and then the Redskins. Well, now the Washington football team. And now she works for
Commanders.
Nike. Yeah, Commanders. Oh,
The third name shift. You've heard. Just like Roy Hibbert in a Laker uniform. It drops out of the mind sometimes. It's unbelievable.
I'll tell you. But I mean, if they were a little bit better and mentioned a little more as Commanders, then I would remember that. But that's another story.
They got it. They should get Lamar, and then, it'll all make sense.
Uh-oh. But
I'll talk for another hour easily about Lamar. Don't even get me going. It's unbelievable.
But like, now she was like social media manager for them. Now she works for Nike Chicago. So you can parlay social into so many different things, from like marketing to community to whatever. Just because of your ability to tie this all back together, to adapt to so many different things.
I love it.
Tie the pieces together, nice and easy. Side note, we here at the Sports Business Classroom all think LeBron should get paid. Lamar should get paid, not LeBron. LeBron, disclaimer.
I'm going to say, how much do you want to get paid? Good Lord.
No, LeBron's more than paid enough. All right. Two more, I promise. Last two.
You're good.
One, as a fellow Laker fan, how are we feeling? How are we feeling about the new look Lakers? Because I'm in heaven right now. We went through a tough year and a half.
I am living. I love the changes. You know, I love what Westbrook, I got to say. I think I love him on other teams. I'm going to be honest. Everybody, I love the D'Lo second chance over here. Everybody who came to the Lakers in like these trade talks, I'm on board with. And what I love is that it's a strong squad without LeBron right now. Like, obviously you would need him, but these guys are working on their own, and I'm loving what I'm seeing.
Couldn't be happier. They fit like a glove. It's almost as if LeBron, AD, and role players is a better idea. Did they win a championship? I forget.
You know,
when they did that.
That makes so much sense.
I don't know. Maybe we should be working on the chess. All right. Last question. No, sorry, seriously, shout out Rob. He was great this deadline. My last one, I ask all of our guests. It's the never-ending debate in NBA circles. Who's your GOAT?
Kobe Bean Bryant. I
knew it. Let's go.
I learned so much. And, like, I grew up 90s. I'm seeing Grant Hill, Jordan, Penny, Shaq, Keem, like all these great players. But when Kobe came on, it was completely different. Like, he even taught me, I used to wonder why he would like suck on his jersey. I'd never thought of this, but he was like getting like moisture into his mouth before like they would call timeout or whatever. And I'm like, I got that from him. And Mamba mentality. And so much of the game I learned through him, but not just the game, work ethic. Because I'm just thinking...
The game of life.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, honestly, I'm like, I have a great shot, and I'm pretty fire as a ball player, but that's not going to be sustainable. Like, I have to work. And it also translated into other things. Like, yes, I'm great at social media, but there are so many other things I have to, like, use to get where I want to be other than social media. So I can't rely on any one thing. So Kobe, final answer, he the greatest. RIP.
Some have Plato, some have Socrates. For the Laker fans, we got the Mamba. Always and forever. Thank you so much for coming on, Jasmine. It was a pleasure having you on the SBC audio experience. This is awesome. Thank you for being a good sport about some of my questions. Hopefully we will see the Trill Withers one at some point. But it was great having you. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me. Anytime.
Wow, what a story. Huge thank you to Jasmine for giving us her time today and a few laughs and giving us a peek behind the curtain of her life, helping bring the community into the next era at the Swoosh. You can find the show's notes and links to everything from our conversation at sportsbusinessclassroom.com/podcast. And you can connect with Jasmine via her social channels at Jasmine L. Watkins on Twitter and at the Jasmine L. Watkins on Instagram. That'll do it for this week's episode. I'll see you next time here on the Sports Business Classroom audio experience.